You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kolula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
For the most, Nikki Kolula. We're going to jump right into this episode. We are welcoming back Sabrina Cyan. How are you, Sabrina?
Doing great. How you doing tonight?
I'm good. You've had a busy weekend premiering your album release party, right?
Yeah. It was the biggest crowd I've ever headlined, and it was the most fun.
And you did it at the Hotel Cafe, right?
Yep.
Amazing. And you had an extended band. I think you told me you had horns, or what did you have? What was the lineup?
So trumpet, violin, two background vocalists, piano, bass, guitar, drums. We had Phoebe, who was doubling, going back and forth between electric bass and upright bass, which was really fun. It was a grand old time. I love these like big arrangements. So I was like in my playground. It was great.
Well, it's also cool. It's like, you know, it's not always easy to put a huge band together. So like when you're rehearsing and when you're doing all that, it's like, it's the best. It's like, oh my God, this is going to be so big, so awesome because you're putting time into it. Did you rehearse the band together? Did you do sectionals? How did you do it?
A little bit of both. We did like rhythm sectionals to start, background vocalist sectional. I worked with the pianist directly. This was my first time ever letting go of the reins of playing keys.
Wow, you didn't do it at all.
Well, wow. I did. I there was like a more intimate section of the set where I was playing keys and singing, but for most of the big band numbers, I had all my hands and I was not playing keys, which was literally unprecedented for me. So that was really fun.
I have to ask you from a personal standpoint, did it feel strange to do it like that?
Yeah, it definitely felt strange. It takes a lot of trust, and I had an amazing pianist, Tara, and she was she was understanding of like how much it means to me and how, you know, if I'm playing the parts, like I'm extra particular about the keys arrangements. I think that it was also a new territory, learning how to use my physicality and like have all of my limbs accessible to me and use that performance. And I had a lot of fun with that, but I also think that there's a lot of room to play with that and hone that in. So I'm really excited for that.
Were you ever like, you're playing the inversion of that chord a little bit wrong? Can you play first inversion instead of second inversion? Did you do any of that? Or were you just like, you did?
Yes.
You
had to, no.
I get it.
Yeah. She was very patient. But I was like, so I play the fourth on that, and I really like that suspension. And if we could keep that in there, that'd be great.
He's like, oh man. I'm like, I have to deal with all the pianists. Remarks, you know, but I'm sure she's used to it. You have to be, you know. Excuse me, I've been recovering from a flu, which has been brutal for the last couple of weeks.
I'm so sorry.
It's okay. So I have a little cough right now, but I'm okay. I'm all right. We will do the interview and we'll be fine. So don't worry. So tell me, how many songs did you play from the new record? Were they all from the new record? Did you kind of mix in some songs that were unreleased?
Yeah, so it was like a 50-minute set. So, and the EP is about 25 minutes long.
Wow.
So I incorporated some new songs, and you have to understand that like these songs were written 3 to 4 years ago. So it's like I was just like, I need to do something that I've written in the last year at least.
Right.
And so I opened with a new song, and people really Love that one. It was really fun. It's called No One's Baby, which I think I'm going to record soon. I really like it. And yeah, and then I had all those, I did like an intimate set of three songs. There was, yeah, like these are all songs I kind of wrote 3 years ago when I was going through this traumatic loss. And so that was kind of the theme of the night. It was like grief bleeding into joy. And right. Yeah, it was, I don't know. People seem to like the journey.
Yeah. I have no doubt. You are such a great songwriter and artist. And it's always the hardest, I think, for every artist. Where it's like, you live with a record for so long. You write these songs. You know, perfecting this record to make it sound a certain way. And then meanwhile, you're writing songs. You're like, man, I should have recorded this song, but it's okay. Yeah. It's like the hardest feeling. And then I'll tell you something, because I can tell you this. I'm probably about 15 or 20 years ahead of you from my first record, because I did my first record in 2003. And what's really funny is you go through these like super prolific times, especially when you're like just starting to make records and you're like, oh my God, this is amazing. You're playing out. And there are songs that will slip through the cracks that you'll go back to and listen to. You're probably doing it now, where you will save those songs to record them for 10, 15, and 20 years. Because a lot of the songs I just did with Tony Levin, I actually pulled out songs from the vault. I did like about two or three new ones. And then I did about four old ones. And I was like, man, this just has to be recorded. Because you're in this place when you're writing that you don't even know that you're in, that you're just writing prolifically and you're writing great songs. They're very from the heart and they have a sound and they're very much you. Because like when you're starting out and you've been playing for like the first couple of years, you're really establishing your sound. You know, and I know you know this. It's like you're like, I'm digging deep into who I am as an artist, what I want it to sound like, what I want the world to experience. And that's such a great period. Let's talk about this record. While you were in this record, were you writing or were you kind of so focused on the record that was where all your energy was going?
I think I had, like you mentioned, I had a really prolific period. And that's when all the songs on the record were written, as well as like really dozens other song. I was just processing a lot. And then I think when I was recording, I wasn't really letting myself write, because I have a full-time job and like a different career that I'm very passionate about. So I was like, I need to put all of my energetic eggs into the recording basket, because I don't know if I have any. And also it's like, you don't want to, like you said, you don't want to start writing something else and then feel more passionate towards the new thing. Oh. And so I really wanted to like stay in, in those songs. And now I feel so free. And I'm like, I'm so excited to be writing again and give myself allowance to write again. And just today I was like writing this new song. I feel like I was putting a dam on my creativity, and now I can let the dam break and let it all run wild.
Well, the best advice I can give too is also record every rehearsal, record every concert, record every demo, because it's so hard to keep track of all of these, believe it or not. It's like, especially like I had to reach out to my old sax player from like 15 years ago. And I was like, hey man, I don't have this on my laptop. Do you have this live recording of this song? Because I can't remember the lyrics for the second verse. And he was like, man, it's so weird that you're emailing me, because I was just listening to these songs thinking, oh, this is such a great live recording. He's like, here, I have it. And then there have been studios where I've worked where we did acoustic demos of songs and I forgot about them and then had to go back in the vault and then I had to reach out to them. And I had recordings of these, but as you change computers, as you change hard drives, you see things just start slipping through the cracks. So it's so hard to like stay organized. And I'm pretty organized. Like I have things from like 25 years ago, 20 years ago, like all done. But I mean, it's just hard to keep it all together. So like, do your best to make sure everything is documented and put in a Dropbox or something. So
it's, I'm a voice memo fiend. I record everything. I don't even want to know how many voice memos I have on my phone, but I pay for like a terabyte of iCloud storage just so I have peace of mind.
Yes.
That if something happens to my local devices, that I don't lose anything, because you can't really get it back, you know, once the wave hits you.
I've also lost some of those things. Like, it's like I have three Dropbox accounts with terabytes of memory. I have that because I have lost hard drives. I have lost phones or whatever it is. And it's like, when you lose those things, they're so invaluable, you know, or things have gotten stolen. You know, it's like that happens too. Computers get stolen all the time, but it's amazing when you can just hold on to everything as much as possible and keep it close to you and then get into the studio and record them. How did you choose the songs you were going to put on the record?
I really wanted to tell a specific story. And that story is about navigating loss.
Right.
So it was very clear to me that I can kind of go through the story piece by piece, or we can, showing. So, I mean, it starts out with A Quiet Place, which is about feeling like you need to kind of isolate yourself when you're going through periods of grief or hardship, because in relationship to other people, you have to be there for them,
right,
and just feeling like you don't have anything to give. And so needing to put yourself in a quiet place. And then,
that's beautiful.
Thank you. And then, the second track, Never Forever, is about the permanence of, like death, honestly, like losing, like about a loved one who has died, and not ever coming into contact with such permanence before in life. Slippery Slope is the third track, and it is a journey. I think people will say, feel your feelings, like feel them to their depth. But this song kind of explores what does that look like? You know, what is, if you feel your feelings to their fullest extent, you might just collapse completely.
Right.
So hence the slippery slope. It's a slippery slope to feel your feelings.
Right.
And then Simple Pleasures is the fourth track, and it is all about grounding yourself in nature and what will always be there, especially in times of hardship or uncertainty. And then Earthshake is kind of the gratifying ending, where you've, you know, processed a lot of the hard stuff and you are feeling on top of the world. So that's kind of like the arc.
You did like a cycle. This is amazing. That's awesome.
Thank you. Yeah, it was always really clear to me that I wanted that to be the story.
And you chose the title of the EP to be Never Forever. How did you, any one of those songs could have been the title of the EP. How did you choose that one?
So the song Never Forever, the second track, is never comma forever. So right. It's like the state of never, and that is existing forever. The track... The EP title is Never Forever Without a Comma, which indicates that it's actually never forever. Nothing lasts forever. Your hardship and your hard feelings don't last forever. Neither does your joy, and it's all transient. So like that was, again, it felt like no other track could be the title of the EP. So that was kind of the meaning.
Have you read the book The Prophet by chance?
No, I haven't. Who's the author?
You need to read this. It's Khalil Gibran. I think it's Gibran.
Oh. Yeah, I've heard
it. Book. You will love this book. It is a songwriter's book for sure. The whole book is told in poetic prose, all the chapters are like 2 to 3 pages. They're not long, but they're so profound on philosophy, on everything, on death, on friendship, on marriage, on relationships, on love, on all of it. It just touches on this whole concept of life. And what you just said is one of the things it talks about. Like, there's one of the things it says, and I'm paraphrasing, it says, know when you are joyful that sorrow is asleep in the bed, you know, and know that when you are sorrowful, joy is sitting on the edge of the bed, you know, like it's like this ever changing cycle of both, and they're both connected. Like, you can't really know one without the other, but when you're right. The other is asleep in the bed with you, and
yeah,
it'll just come and shift. So it's very much right up your alley with everything you went through with this record. When you were writing the songs, obviously you're in a place when you're writing these songs. When you're recording them, sometimes that's difficult because you almost have to reinvent that place or tap into that emotional state. How was that for you while you were recording?
That's a great question. It was, full transparency, I wrote this record about losing my father suddenly. And it's something that is kind of with me every day. So it felt kind of easy to access because I'm kind of always, yes. Thinking about him, always like feeling these feelings. So it never felt like I had to, you know, meditate on it and put myself back in that state of mind. It's just kind of within me always.
Of course. Yeah. It's something that is, you know, especially a parent, it's like, those are your footholds, you know, and especially father and daughter, that's a very significant foothold in life. And it's like, when you lose that, you almost feel like you lose your footing a little bit, and you're just trying to deal with finding a foothold again, you know? So I love that you channeled all that into songs for all of us to listen to and find our footholds. Let's play something. What do you want to play first? Your choice.
I would say Slippery Slope. It is a long song.
Right. It's like, we got time.
Great. So now that we have time, let's start with that.
All right. Here's Slippery Slope by Sabrina Sayan.
Someone taught me to be strong. When you cry, then you cry. When it comes, then it comes out. Daddy taught me not to dwell on the currents of life as they flow and they swell. For we do not have control of the circumstances, social dancing. Yeah, we only have control over our minds, and I can't seem to find how to feel the pain without falling apart, how to let it rain without drowning. Let guess it all goes away eventually. There's no storm without release. There's aggression to the mean. We're on spinning ground, so the sun is bound to be seen. Feeling all the pain means I might fall apart. Standing in the rain might mean drowning. I can let the river run and get pretty far.
God, that was tremendous. I still got chills. I still have chills right now. Woo! That was a beautiful, beautiful song. Incredible arrangement. Incredible vocal. Just fantastic. Do you listen to Jeff Buckley at all?
Kind of. I mean, his big ones.
Well, you've got some influence somehow, maybe subconsciously, with how he arranges things, because it's just hauntingly beautiful in so many great parts, and then these great big lifts. It's just really, really tremendous. I mean, wow. What a song. Tell us how you thought about the arrangement when you were recording this.
When, you mean before recording or during the process?
Because sometimes it changes when you're recording, you know, like, you may have an idea of how a song's going to be, and then you take things out or add things as you're in it. Or did you kind of have it all mapped out and you're like, this is exactly what I want it to be?
I mean, definitely the structural elements of the song were all mapped out already. Like when the meter changes were, when the key changes were, those were all. What'd you say?
I said, I love the halftime stuff was so awesome. Just like, thanks. Here go, oh, what's that? You know, it's really tremendous, really, really great. Tell me,
you never let someone get bored. You have to be like, oh, what am I listening to?
Weird thing though too is there's a lot of bands and a lot of artists that they'll do that, and it's like they're trying to get your attention. Whereas I didn't feel that with this song. It's just like, oh, this is an artistic choice to make the song enhanced. And it's not trying to be like, hey, look at me. It's not doing that. It's actually serving the song. That's the big difference. It's like, when it went to the halftime thing, I was like, oh, man, this is such a good feel. And, like, your vocal goes low, too. It's like you're painting the words that you're, you know, talking about and singing about. It's just really well done. Really, really beautiful. So you knew all that was going to go into it. Did anything change while you were recording it, or were you, like, surprised by any elements of it?
I mean, I think it was just adding, I was just adding layers as we went. So it was, like, drums, bass, guitar, and then I was having some fun on the keys. Like, I don't know if there were some embellishments up there. I was just having a fun day in the studio with that. I was having a really fun day. This is my favorite day in the studio, was in the instrumental storm section, the break section. You might have heard like this like high synth that climaxes into like the clearing of the storm is what I call it. So that was just like me on a little MIDI keyboard, and it was just we didn't even know that needed to be there, but we just kept listening to it and something felt like anticlimactic. Right. So we just I was like, we need to put something there. So that's one example. And then Also, I wasn't expecting to put French horn in there. I was just expecting to arrange the viola and the violin. And then, I just felt like we needed another timbre. And I always knew that I wanted this song to feel very orchestral and very full. And I just love layered harmonies. I'm such a maximalist musically when it comes to arranging. Give me like 20 parts and I will have fun. Like, give me 20 instruments and I will give them parts.
We share this parallel because I think there's no limit. It's like, throw everything there and make sure that it's arranged right. You know, where it's like, where instruments have parts and they have like moments. And it's like, if you give all these instruments moments, it ends up being this like symphonic, you know, effect where it's like you're creating movements and it just happens to be a song. But it's like, this is what I always want songwriters to think about, because, you know, it's not just a song. It has to be the studio has to be the other instrument that you're playing, you know? And it's like, when you're in that place and you're adding these textures and you're hearing it when you're, you know, it's weird. Like, studios also, that environment offers the thing. It's like, oh, this is what I should do here because it feels right. Whereas maybe you didn't think about the French horn before. And it's like, oh, you're in this place, you're in this environment, you're hearing it on these great big speakers or beautiful monitors, you're hearing out all the textures, and you're like, oh, I hear all the things that need to be happening here that aren't there yet. Can we add this? You know what I mean? So it's cool. How you listen in a studio is just as important as how you walk in and want to track the song, you know? So
I forgot the real answer to your question is, I don't know if you heard this because he put it really far back in the mix, but before the instrumental section, like leading into it with the bridge into the instrumental section, I was tracking background vocals, and there was a part that was just like, ah, into the instrumental section. And I was like, I just need to scream. Right. So I layered like 8 different tracks of me just screaming in harmony, but it was truly like a scream. Right. And it was pretty far back in the mix, which was what made it acceptable. But it was like, I feel like it really added the energy and the agony that was needed. I never would have thought I would like just spend an hour screaming, but that's what happened.
Well, I mean, that's the beauty of a studio too. It's like, you start doing weird stuff, like, you know, and you'll forget about those things. You'll forget about them. And then 10 years later, you'll listen and you'll be like, oh my God, I forgot. Yeah. Like, that's the beauty of like being present and creating in a studio to do weird things, to add textures. And it's like, and it's also, you know, you'll listen to it on big speakers, but then you'll have a different experience. You're listening to headphones and you're like looking for those things. And there's such an emotional attachment to those things when they happen, because that's one of the reasons why I asked you if you did listen to Jeff Buckley, because he does a lot of stuff like that. Exactly what you just said, that effect, he does stuff like that all the time. And he'll do it with guitars or he'll do it with vocals. I watched this great documentary and Radiohead saw Jeff Buckley performing like a show in New York. And Tom York was so inspired by it that he wrote Fake Plastic Trees like right after he saw him play. And it's like, that's what great art does. It just like makes you inspired to write, or like, you want to write something in that vein. And I know that this song is going to do that for other people. I mean, it hit me like, it's such a beautiful song and has so many textures. You just did such a fantastic job. What a great way to start this interview. Wow. Well, what are we going to play next? What's the next song we're going to play?
Okay. I'll give you the choice. Do you want like a grief banger, emotional banger, or like a fun upbeat song?
Let's end with the fun upbeat. Give me that emotional banger. What's the emotional banger we're going to play?
Never Forever.
Ah, perfect. Title track. Here's Never Forever by Sabrina Cyan.
I heard your favorite song last night. Accepting your fate again and again and again from the earth.
good. So good. It's crazy. Wow. I love the vocals. Amazing. Like, just awesome. Tell me what the concept was behind this and how you kind of approached this going into the studio.
Yeah. The concept, I touched on it a bit before, but just the permanence of losing somebody and never having encountered, like, I personally, I had never encountered a loss like that. And it's like the fabric of your reality is punctured. And so that's kind of the feeling I was trying to capture. And like with the hits and the choruses, like the da, 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 it's like getting stuck and can't, like, not being able to move past that idea of permanence. So yeah, I mean, kind of the same thing going into the studio. We tracked drums, bass, and guitar. And then I added piano later on, and I added background vocals later on. I arranged the strings, and we did a separate string studio day. And I don't remember when we folded in the lead vocals, but I think that was so cathartic, that day in the studio, just being able to sing that and really get into that headspace and feel it.
Yeah. You can hear it in the vocal. It's like the delivery is there. It's like there's pain. It's beautiful, but there's emotion. I mean, it's just swimming all over this. It's like you can hear the anguish. And I think that's the hardest thing to get on a record. And you feel it. You definitely laid it down. Did you do all the songs, like song by song, when you recorded it? Or did you do like drums and bass for all the songs and scratch vocals? Like, how did you approach the whole EP?
So I should say that there's one track on the EP that was recorded completely separately than the other four. That's Simple Pleasures, which I don't have lined up for today, because we played it last time I was on. But
that's right. I'm glad you remembered.
Yeah. but that one was done completely separately, different engineer in a different studio. But the other four were all, the drums, bass, and guitar were all tracked on the same day. And we, I recorded a scratch vocal that they then recorded too, if that makes sense. So like, so yeah, we did a whole run through and then they used that scratch vocal to record multiple takes. Yeah.
So you were in the, like, the control room when they were doing the drums and bass.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
For some takes I was, and then for other takes I was kind of conducting to try to get the emotionality and the dynamics and the contour that I wanted.
Yeah. Sometimes, like, when I'm recording with a band, I find that you don't know what they're going to play, like how they're going to play take to take. Like, they could do dynamics differently. And so it affects maybe what I'll do vocally, just to get an idea of maybe either keeping it for the track for the final or influencing when I do the final track, you know, like some vocal thing. I love these little explosions in the studio where it's like there's just fireworks and you don't know where they're coming from, but at the same time it's, you're creating those fireworks with the vocal and they're following that, so you're doing it the same way and inverses of each other. So did you find that when you were conducting them, you were kind of like guiding them into the emotions of the song, or did you just have certain things you just wanted them to hit and land as like footings in the song for you?
Yeah, I think that so in that song particularly, there are those hits in the choruses that, like, the bum 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 ba da 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 bum bum, and I really I like really wanted those to swell and get, you know, crescendo and get very intense as they went on. So I was literally in the studio being like, wah, wah.
Do whatever it takes to get it.
Whatever it takes. Yeah. And I hope it wasn't distracting, you know, like they have to like look at their instruments, but I was like, I'm over here waving my arms around. I did the same thing on the strings recording day. Yeah. So
that's sometimes how you get what you need, you know, it's like, it's interesting how people can play. You can have 10 people playing the same notes or same hits, and they'll all play them differently. And
yeah.
That's one of the coolest things about being a songwriter is like, oh, let's try it like this together with this emotional kind of like narrative. And then that's when they do it. You know, it's like there's like a shape of everything that we kind of, maybe we hear it in our heads. Maybe we kind of always wanted it to be. And then when you're getting that result with things you're kind of doing to, you know, get them in that place, it shows up on the recording. You know, it's like you got those dynamic shifts in the song. I have to ask you, how many mixes did it take for you to get through, for you to say, yes, this is the one? I know you're particular. You have to be.
I'm very particular.
I'll ask you two questions. I'll say, how many mixes was this song? And then I'll say, what song had the most mixes? I'm assuming it's the one we just played before.
But yes, you would be right. You would be right.
How many do you remember, like, okay, it's good here? Or was it a number so high that you don't remember?
I want to say like 11 for this one.
Not bad.
I need to give a shout out to Bill Mims, who is the engineer, the recording engineer and the mixing engineer for this project, other than Simple Pleasures, which was John O'Brien. But yeah, Bill was very patient with me. I am very particular. So, and then Slippery Slope, I don't know. I think it was like 18 or 19, but I might be hyperbolizing in my head, but it felt like that many.
Well, you should be particular because the songs are beautiful and lush and the arrangements are just super incredible. They're just great. I mean, I meant what I said, like, you know, some friends of mine bought tickets for us for Amy Mann on Saturday on their CD release. And then you told me, hey, I'm doing my CD release. I'm like, oh my God, I would so rather see you. And Amy Mann was kind of boring. Like, she was cool, but it wasn't you. It wasn't, and I would have rather seen you, but that's why I asked you to play with us at the Mint. So,
Like,
one way or another, I'm going to hear this band. I'm going to hear your songs live with a full band. But let's talk a little bit about this. You know, the reason I asked you is, you know, the Whitney Houston Bodyguard, I Will Always Love You. My mastering engineer told me that the producer walked in with 65 mixes of that song. And they were all on tape. Now I'm going to ask you a random question. What mix do you think they used out of 65 mixes for the one that made it to the record?
One.
Three. That was close. But, you know, the funny thing is, like, I usually never go back to an old mix. I don't know if you've ever done that. I've never gone back to an old mix because the mixes evolve. Like, if I do 11 mixes, we're getting it on mix 11, and that's the one, and that's the one that we're going to go forward with. So I was kind of shocked that he said they went back and listened to old mixes, because if you do a lot of mixes, I never go back. And so I was going to ask you, do you ever go back to an old mix to reference? Or, yeah, I don't do that. So I was kind of shocked they did and then chose such an early mix that, you know, maybe they felt more passionately about. So
I think when you get to 65, it's like something's not working here. So you have to retrace your steps.
This perspective. I mean, honestly, like, I try to get them between 3 and 7 if I can. Like, 3 to 5 is like the magic. Like, I'm like, okay, yes. Okay, this is giving me chills. Okay, cool. And then it's real easy. I know you felt this, I'm sure, where it's like there's not much of a difference between 6 and 7, but there's a big difference between 7 and 10. And when you're like right on the doorstep and you know it, you're like, okay, this is great. I'm going to give you a piece of advice that a great engineer taught me. And it's something that I still hold with me. He said, get it to 98%, because there's no such thing as 100%. And
right.
He said, there's 1,000 ways to get to 98%. So as long as you feel like you get it to 98%, you'll never question it. And I'm like, he told me that about 14 years ago. And I just love that, because it is going to get there. Like, all of these songs have gotten there and they're across the finish line. But it's that when you know it's there is a hard instinct to figure out. You know what I mean? So when he told me that, I was like, man, I wish I knew that when I was in my 20s. You know, just like it's just like a sense of, oh, yeah, it's good. It's already good. You know, or, yeah, it's already there. Like you don't feel like that as a songwriter, and you're producing all this stuff too. So when you're in the studio, you want it to be as good as it can be, and you owe that to your music because the songs are incredible. Sabrina, your songs are amazing. There's no question about it. And the recordings are amazing, and the mixes are amazing. It all shows. So of course you want it to be as good as it can be, but you did it. So how did you know when a song was ready, when it was like, okay, it was done? What was that for you? What was that moment?
I feel like I was always forced to just say it's done.
Right.
And so I'll start with John O'Brien, who recorded and mixed Simple Pleasures, which is the fourth track. He had a principle. I think it was like two mixes or three mixes, and then that's all that's like included, and then any more would be, you know, additional. And I was like, okay, so that was kind of my I had that to work from, and I was like, okay, we're gonna get it in these two or three mixes. And then with the four songs that Bill did, like, he was literally going on vacation for over a month, and I really needed to be done with it. So like, it was literally the day before he was leaving, and we were like texting back and forth, like, can you change this one small thing? Because we knew that like it needed to be, I needed to get these to the mastering engineer before he left.
Right.
So if he hadn't gone on vacation, I don't think I would have ever, like, I truly don't think we would be here right now.
Somebody, one of my students told me this. He said, art is finished when it's abandoned. And it's like, I have to walk away from it sometimes. And it's like his vacation, you to just be like, all right, I'm done. That's it. You know what I mean? And it's like, because truth be told, I could do 145 mixes of all of my songs. I could easily get it to 145, like no problem, because of all the little things that I want to be there. And yeah. I have my bands took years to make records back in the day. And yeah. Now we do it in months, you know, but it is an amazing experience that when you know it's ready, it's like, okay, there's nothing else I can do to it to like make it more enhanced than it is. And sometimes those things, those vacations or whatever, are great factors to kind of halt you from beating a dead horse. You know what I mean? It's like, it's exactly it.
And I think I've deluded myself into thinking like, oh, I think I know what I could do to make that 2% up and get it to 100. And it's just at a certain point, it's actually just not even worth it. Because like you said, when you have that 98%, the content and the purpose of the song are being delivered.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't really matter anymore whether you have the 2%. It's just, that's icing.
Really exist. Every perfect recording that you listen to of somebody else's, they're like, oh, it was just not, we didn't have, oh, we ran out of, or we it was the wrong take. Oh, it was the, I mean, it's The Long and Winding Road. Paul McCartney hates that song. It's like, what? That's like an epic Beatles song with a great string arrangement. He hates the string arrangement. He hates the choir. He hates all of it. It's like, there's certain artists. Norah Jones can't listen to her first record. Chris Martin can't listen to the first Coldplay record. They're just like, oh my God, it's just awful. And it's like, these are perfect records to me. These are perfect records. So,
yeah. You know,
I think it's important to kind of abandon it. Abandon the perfect record and just make it as good as it can be. Because when it gets to 98%, it is as great as anybody will ever get to experience it. You know, so I give you these wise words as an old man saying, trust that 98% because your songs are incredible. And I know you could probably go to 1,000 mixes in the same way. Like, it's easy. It's easy.
Yeah, it's,
you want to hear every little thing reach that certain level, but it's like, there are people that I know, and they spent, a friend of mine, Dave Ron Harris, who plays with John Mayer, he did a record, and he said it took him 3 years to make. And he said, it's my favorite record of his. And I said, David, this is just a tremendous record. It's amazing. And he said, I don't even know anymore because I've lost the barometer of where
the record is.
taking me too long to get it out. Like, I'm so in the record, and then I lost my bearings, and at that point, I was just like, it just needs to get out. And somehow, it turned into a masterpiece to me, and yeah. We could all be lost in that. We could spend all that time making it perfect, and then get lost in it. So, it's okay. I'm sure you know this. There's so many artists that have gotten lost in it. So,
yeah.
Easy. But your music is tremendous. Let's play another song. What do we play next?
Let's close it out with Earthshake, then.
All right. Here's Earthshake by Sabrina Sayan.
Breaking up with you.
Tell me that's a closer at your show.
Yeah.
It's so good. It's like, how could it not be? That's definitely, and you closed the record with it too.
Yeah, yeah. And during the show, we like vamped the bridge and I introduced the band and it was a great time.
That's awesome. Yeah, it just sounds like high energy. Like, does it make you want to write more songs like that when you, I always feel like, why am I not writing more songs like this? It's just so fun. You know?
Yeah.
Can't dictate it always, but it definitely, whenever I'm in that place, I'm like, I need to write more songs like this. This is just fun.
Yeah. It's very rare for me to write a song like that. And I definitely try to get myself to write more songs like that, but I'm just one for a, a sad little ballad.
You know what's funny? David said the same thing. He said, "Man, I want to be able to write the fun song, but he's like, I just like that slow blues in 12. Like, he's like, I'm just addicted to it. It's like, I just can't get out." I'm like, I get it. Like, I think we write what we hope we can write, but we fall into, but I just love this. You know, it's like, and there's nothing wrong with it. It's great. No. Sabrina, your music is fantastic. It is incredible. I'm honored to have you playing with us at the Mint on April 2nd.
Woo!
A lot of fun. And I want to just ask you, where can people find you online? Where can people find your music? Because they need to listen to this. This is amazing music.
Thank you. I am on all streaming platforms under Sabrina Cyan. That is Sabrina like the witch and Cyan like the color, maybe in your printer ink. And I'm on, the best way to contact me or see what I'm up to is on Instagram. Again, just at Sabrina Cyan. My TikTok handle is the same if you want to see me do stuff that's a little bit weirder than what I do on Instagram. that would be TikTok. So that's how to find me.
Well, Sabrina, your music is incredible. I'm so excited to play our first show together, hopefully the first of many.
Yeah. And
your music is really just outstanding. I hope you know that. I know you know that, but I have a feeling this is just the beginning for your record making process and also the joy you're going to bring to people with these songs and with these albums. So I wish you many years of joyful success with this record and many more. And I hope you never stop doing this because you are fantastic. You are really a tremendous artist.
I don't
use those words sparingly, so I really mean it. And I really loved this interview. It was so much fun.
Yeah, it was really fun. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, check out Sabrina's music, Sabrina Cyan, on all the platforms. On behalf of Sabrina, myself, and Sam, we'll see you guys next week. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Go listen to Sabrina's music. She's one of the best new artists around. Go check out her new record. Peace, love, and hair grease. We'll see you guys next week.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.